What's up, everybody? This is Chris, and welcome to a super special episode of the Fistful of Potions podcast. Rather than bringing you our normal cast this week, we did an interview with Edmund McMillans and Tommy Refness from Team Meat, the makers of Super Meat Boy. Leading this interview is Jason and James, with a couple of remarks from Ryan. I wasn't there, unfortunately. I was recording the whole thing, but I did get to listen to it, and it was pretty amazing, not gonna lie. So starting out, without further ado, take it away, Jason.
All right, so we did a lot of research on previous interviews, and so we're going to try to do questions that don't so much pertain to what you've already been asked. So,
I don't know who's teaching you guys your journalism.
Yeah.
In America, you just ask the same question in your research.
We're trying to think outside the box here.
Yeah, we don't really want to be journalists.
Not all of these necessarily pertain to Super Meat Boy, but more or less follow-up questions to what you have been asked and other things about the industry. So,
bring them on.
Starting off, in a previous interview, it was said that Tommy loved Mega Man 9. So I was just wondering what your thoughts were on the 10th entry in the series.
And I played Mega Man 10 at a WiiWare summit, and that was it.
All right.
It didn't do enough for me to justify going, oh yeah, I would like to buy this again, because I already have 9.
That's true. All right.
And there's 8 more Mega Mans below that one that are pretty much the same.
This is beautiful on our end, as Jason has the platinum. Mr. Perfect for that.
Also, being that Super Meat Boy and Meat Boy in general was to be like a difficult kind of game, I was wondering what you thought of the newly added easy mode to Mega Man, what your thoughts on that were.
I didn't even know they added
one. On the 10th one, they added an easy mode for people.
What does it do?
It takes away enemies. It also puts like platforms over the spikes.
That is fucking retarded.
that's probably why the sales sucked. Honestly,
at that point, why don't you just watch a YouTube of somebody playing through it? Because there's no point in playing the game anymore.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Marketing people are fucking idiots.
I love this.
Oh, guy. Mega Man. Yeah, that game's been hard forever. But you know what players really want is not that.
That's a valid point right there.
Jesus Christ. That's disappointing. But not unexpected either.
So that's totally making you guys put an easy mode in Super Meat Boy, right?
Yeah. The easy mode is just don't buy the game.
You can still pay us, though. You can still pay us.
Just don't play the game.
Let's donate you.
We should just have an easy mode that just goes back to arcade.
I wonder if we could get away with that.
I don't know.
That'd be awesome.
We need to ask Kevin. Easy mode. Just right back to the arcade dashboard.
So the easy mode wouldn't be like a Tiger Electronics version of it?
we have one of those, but it's actually not easy. There are parts where it's impossible. Hard. Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Next question. What do you think of up-and-coming games that are supposed to be blockbusters for the industry, and why do you think they'd be good or bad?
What are upcoming games that are supposed to be blockbusters? Like Halo?
Like Halo or Gears of War, all like just the big names that people whore out, like the new Call of Duty, those types of games.
I think all of those games are identical.
Yeah. I'm the only blockbuster game that I think that I'm looking forward to is the new Fallout.
Yeah.
I'll buy that. I'm trying to think. I'll buy Diablo.
I'll buy StarCraft after we get into Alpha.
Yeah. I can't think of any other like big games that I think I'd be into.
I'll buy the new Metal Gear whenever that comes out, the Metal Gear Rising.
Yeah.
I'll buy the new Zelda.
Well, yeah. Did you like the E3 stuff that they showed?
Yeah. For Zelda?
Yeah, the almost one-to-one, but not really. Like, you have to, like, hold your hands out in front of you, like you're really Link and shit.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I'm huge fan of that either, but I'll still buy it and play it.
Yeah, it's Zelda. I mean, it's still going to be cool. But, yeah, I don't know.
Definitely not super exciting. Like,
yeah, it's...
I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't even that excited about Twilight Princess. I didn't think that was that great. Wind Waker was, I think, a very underrated Zelda game, and I was pretty excited about that one, but...
Just had that one awful part.
Gotta fucking go all around the map everywhere for it's called killing, buying some time. That game, like where they bundle all the side quests into that one island. Do you remember that?
I don't even know if I got that far. I got to the point where it told me to find the first shard, and I found the first shard, and then I saw how much that took up in the little indicator of how many pieces you have to get, and I went, I'm done.
Yeah, it seemed like they were filling space with all the little Triforce pieces going everywhere. There weren't really dungeons for those, but
up until that point,
there was a town. There was one island that was where all the people were, and it had shitloads. All the side quests were there. It was totally optional, but that was some of the best Zelda side quest stuff I've ever played, and I thought it was pretty cool. Like, the high points of that game were really awesome. And I thought, like, the dramatic elements were pretty cool, and the story was extremely dark for how it looked. And especially the ending where you stab Ganon in the head and you're standing on his shoulders. It's pretty fucking cool. I like that Zelda a lot. I also thought it took balls to go in that visual direction, and it seems like they toned it down and made it pretty vanilla in the newest one. It just seems like a blander version of Twilight Princess. But that said, I'll still buy it, and I'm sure I'll eventually buy Mario Galaxy 2. I mean, me and Tommy haven't really been playing games minus, like, I play Magic and Street Fighter, and I know Tommy's playing the StarCraft beta and also Street Fighter. Yeah. We don't have time for investments.
Yeah, so I have Mario Galaxy 2 and Red Dead Redemption, and they're both in their plastic containers.
Awesome.
Like, I haven't even unwrapped them yet. I just haven't had time.
There's just no time for long games. I'm going to play Red Dead Redemption. Yeah. I really want to play that game, but I don't have any fucking time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. I have time, and I can't play that game. So you guys need to play Street Fighter. What version of Street Fighter are you guys playing right now?
I'm playing the most current Super.
Yeah, Super 4.
Are you guys longtime Street Fighter players, or are you guys just kind of new to the series?
No, yeah, I played Street Fighter from the beginning.
Yeah, me too.
I played the shitty Street Fighter 1 where you can barely go far. That was god awful.
Oh yeah.
And if I remember correctly, everybody jumped at the speed of Blanka's jump, so it was like this super up down drop, like really quick.
Pretty much.
And everybody was really tall.
Yeah, they're awkwardly shaped. They're definitely not proportionate. All right. So how do you guys feel about multiplayer becoming such a prominent feature in games nowadays?
I like multiplayer, especially co-op. I like being able to play games with my wife or friends.
Yeah.
Versus is a bit iffy. It's hard to, like, extremely hard to balance that sort of stuff too, because within once a month or two has passed if the game's popular, you just get these crazy hardcore, really, really good players that would just make it unfun for you to play.
Yeah.
I mean, I think even for somebody who's a beginner Street Fighter player to go online and play right now, I think they're going to be incredibly discouraged, even though they have a ranking system, because most people with D grades will still just mop the floor with you if you don't know how to play that well. So it's hard to really practice. And even I, when I was pretty rusty starting out and going from like a D to a C was hard. And playing those players was pretty discouraging. I'm just glad that they don't allow you to talk to each other while you're playing, because I guarantee if I talked shit while they were beating my ass, I would just not play the game anymore.
Yeah.
I like multiplayer. I wouldn't doubt the next game that me and Tommy work on will have multiplayer elements.
Are you guys more of a fan of in-house multiplayer, or are you guys kind of a fan of the internet? being a big help.
I like co-op. I like in-house stuff. I like because it's more of like a fun time. Playing Left 4 Dead was fun when I played it in office with Tommy and my wife and Alex was pretty fun.
That was a good time.
So yeah, it's like there's something to be said about even if you're all on different computers, having a team together in a room is pretty fun, and multiplayer is always fun when you're playing it. Online stuff's pretty fun too, but you can't beat, you know, a co-op type experience.
Definitely bring back the N64 days, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Do you guys think DLC is a good boat to be on or a bad boat to be on right now?
Like downloadable games overall?
Well, just like additional content. Like
the additional stuff?
Crap that's usually on a disc. I know that's kind of, everybody kind of hates that shit where they charge you stuff that's already there, but.
I don't like that.
I don't like that.
I think if you're going to do DLC, it really needs to be justified as something that could not have been packaged in with the original game. Otherwise, it's just like the DLC for, for Grand Theft Auto, where it was like Gay Tony and Lost in the Dam. That was awesome because it basically made an entirely new game. And that was cool. They couldn't have packaged that in because the game was already fucking huge. But like stuff like alternate costumes and stuff, that's like alternate costumes don't bother me because it's up to the people to like buy those. But if it's like, I think Crackdown had it where you had to buy DLC to get like the cheat code to different weapons and stuff.
Yeah,
that to me is just kind of like you probably could have just packaged that extra railgun thingy in with the original game.
See, and, you guys are definitely fans of more expansion packs as opposed to
horse
armor.
Horse armor is stupid. Like Oblivion had the extra quests, like Shimmering Isles and stuff. That was cool.
Yeah.
Because it added like, I don't know, however many more hours of gameplay on top of the already like 60 hours of gameplay that's there. That's fine. But like, you know, stuff. Yeah. Other stuff is just kind of, it's just shady and stupid.
Are you guys gonna put any of that kind of stuff in Super Meat Boy once you get all famous and putting it on consoles and stuff?
In order to jump, you have to buy a 500-point upgrade.
That should be your marketing right there.
Yeah, and every time, if you want to skip a level, that's going to be 80 Microsoft points.
Yes!
Yeah.
You guys are going to be millionaires soon.
There's a bizarrely, I would say, morally questionable, especially in the Facebook game world, downloadable content type, manipulative design stuff that goes into games. It's way, way iffy. Yeah. And it would suck to see that push over into, I mean, it sometimes does creep its way into mainstream games or console games, but that would suck big time because I mean, a lot of the games out there are like, here you can do this and it's, you know, basically running in a treadmill. Click, click, clicking, and you could do that for a week and then get this item, or you could just pay $5 of your real money and get that item. And if anybody's serious enough to go and sit and want to click and click for that amount of time to get that thing, they'll just justify it as, oh, I'll just pay for it. And it's a trick. It's just a addictive manipulation where people think that they are getting the goal when realistically their goal is nothing, but it's an illusion of something. It's like they know that if they had to work for something, that what they'd be getting would be a reward. But realistically, that reward isn't a reward. It's nothing. It's just an illusion of something to come. It's the idea of the unknown. I want to know what's next, and I want that thing that I'm working for, and I want to get it. And I can shortcut it by paying real money, so I'm going to do that. And then they get manipulated into doing so. And in the end, they are left with an empty nothing for what they paid for. It's not like they're buying an extra game or extra content or a new way to play or anything like that. They're just getting something that they've been told that they should have or want. And it's just like consumerism in an imaginary form. It's like a digital consumerism, but it's bizarre. And hopefully that doesn't really
catch on in the real game market, because it's very popular right now online, and it seems like everybody's moving towards Flash games and Facebook games and everything else, and you see all these companies getting $1 million deals and being bought out by, Kongregate just got bought out by GameStop. So, yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen. But realistically, those games really aren't games. They're just time killers, time wasters, and if people want to waste the money, they can. But it just sucks that it's in the same context as something that we're doing where it's just basically pushing drugs.
basically.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, I couldn't agree more with that. And it's kind of a sad fact that, like Electronic Arts has come out and said that pretty much most of their newer games are going to offer a feature of some sort with this in terms of, the $5 download for Skate to unlock everything, or the $5 download for Need for Speed to unlock everything. And most of their newer games are implementing this. So hopefully people do not pick up on the, I don't know, it's called the EA strategy.
Yeah, it's just, it's not good. It's not it's pushing games in a very bad direction. Very, very bad direction. And it's just feeding into, it's like a gambling thing, really. It's just like, you want it. I want to do it. And I want to buy it. And I want to play it. But there's no reason for it. Like, it doesn't give me anything other than having it. It's just all mental manipulation. And they know it because people are buying it. They know it's effective. They know what they're doing. And people are going to keep doing it. And the more they do it, the more they're going to push it. But I mean, maybe if it gets so full of crap that people stop buying it, then they'll stop making it.
Well, yeah, as long as people are buying the good shit like Super Meat Boy, and then there'll always be a little beacon of light to save us from these shitty corporations trying to take our stolen money.
We're gonna get bought up by EA soon, anyway. So.
Oh yeah, I heard that. I mean, God bless EA, right?
Yeah, I love those guys. Whenever I've talked to like a lot of EA people, so is Edmund, and like I don't know about you, Edmund, but I get the feeling that they're just basically trying to like poke at our armor to see where there's a kink, and then like attack there, and then like control us on the inside. Like they're just predators. They're like, they see talent and they like gravitate towards it. And then it's like, how can we exploit this? That's just how every person I've talked to has been exactly like that. It's just so creepy.
What's the thing? Like, I don't even know if a lot of people realize it, but like Kyle Gabler and Ron Carmel both worked at EA, and World of Goo is based on their experience with a giant corruptive company that's ruling everything.
That's awesome.
And that's what the game is about. And I think I've told this story before, but I got contacted, the first time I ever got contacted by EA was like about 4 years ago around like Gish time. And this woman called me and said, basically, are you ready to really make games? And I said, I'm making games. And she said, basically said, no, I'm not making games. And that when I get serious about really making games, to give her a call and she'll get me a job. And I tried to explain to her, no, this is what I'm doing. And this is what I'm doing for a living. And she explained to me that that's not how I'm ever going to make money. And that if I really want to get serious about making games, that EA is the way. And that's that. It was just a really bizarrely like arrogant kind of weird call. And
the truth is, you don't make money working for EA either.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's weird. But it was a bizarre way to headhunt, to go up and say, hey, what you're doing, that's shit. what we're doing is awesome. You should totally work with us.
Didn't we have South Peak say, oh, when you guys are serious about Super Meat Boy, let us know. It's like, they've already got like two console deals.
No, yeah. Who was it? Yeah. Who was it that said? I can't even remember who it was.
I think it was South Peak. I think it was, because we were looking for hobbyists. What's that?
Somebody called us hobbyists.
Yeah, I think that was South Peak.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird, dude. It's bizarre. Like, it's, yeah. But they can all fuck off.
Yeah. It's true. They can.
Heard that.
So in regards to that, you prefer being like a close-knit team opposed to working with like a large group of people?
The smaller the team, the more clear the vision. And that is as basic as you can put it. If me and Tommy had four programmers and five artists underneath us, right? Yeah. And we're telling them what we need. And I'm trying to explain the vision I have for Meat Boy. And this has got to look this way. And this has got to be expressed this way. And yada, yada, yada. If I say to one person, I want Meat Boy to be gentle, but also confident. And I want him to get more confident as the game progresses, but I still want him to have an innocence. Mm-hmm. They're going to take that, apply it to what they learned when they grew up, and they're going to apply it to the game in their own filter. And then the next guy and the next guy. And it's like a game of telephone where whatever message you have degrades and degrades and degrades until it becomes this very basic, flat representation of what you basically said and what you basically wanted. And it's really, really hard in a company full of that many people to have an effective vision that makes sense and is cohesive. And I think it's really apparent in games with small teams that their visions are very tightly knit and very, they have a lot of heart. And I think that's what comes through is as people say that indie games have a lot of heart. I think it's that they have a great tight vision. It's very understood. It's very realized and it's just perfect. It's like a lot of indie movies or a lot of directors who are very anal about what they're doing and do their own editing and all that sort of stuff too. It's better that me and Tommy have complete board because our vision isn't compromised in the slightest. It's very clear and it's to the point. And realistically, I think we're both too anal to have anybody else do our work for us when we know we can do it. I'd rather just draw it myself. Just take that extra time, you know, push us back a month or two and just do it myself because I know I'm not going to be 100% happy with what the person's doing, so there's no point. So we kind of cover all the bases. And I mean, music-wise, we got Danny, and sound effects-wise, we got Jordan. And just having them as contractors basically fills all the holes. And we're a solid team. And business-wise, we know what we're doing. I think it's kind of like an illusion that producers and lawyers and business guys who want jobs cast on everybody saying that they are so needed and blah, 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 blah. When realistically, like, if you've gotten to this point, you know, if you're an independent entity and you've survived a few years without a producer and you're going to work on your bigger game, you're obviously driven enough and on task enough for you to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And business people and press people and all that stuff too. It's like, if we had a press person and me and Tommy weren't doing the press ourselves and we were just like locked out basically. And you guys, like if you guys couldn't approach us in any way and you had to go through a press person and blah, 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 blah. It would kill it. Like I guarantee that we could get more press and we'll get more press. Just us saying, hey, we're two guys, contact us. We'll do whatever. Put us in your magazine, whatever you want to do is fine with us. We will get more, I think, honest representation as well as more people eager to cover us because of that than if we had somebody who was representing us saying, hey, Team Meat wants to be on your podcast. It's just not as genuine. And like, we're not trying to advertise that we are a company. We're trying to advertise that we're a fucking team of two dudes. You know, we don't have money. Like it's just us here, and you don't need a whole bunch of people to make games. Do it yourself.
It's not as difficult as everyone thinks it is. I mean, it is like that's not to sound like an asshole or anything, but it's like awesome. A lot of people are under this conception that in order to make a game, you have to have all of that, like all of this shit, and you have to. Before you even start, you got to make sure that your P&L is good. You got to make sure that the ROI for all the money that you put in is going to be worth the investment and all this. They spend like fucking forever and they hire people to do this for them. And their game that's supposed to be out isn't out because they haven't spent any time actually on the game, you know? But Yeah, that's just...
Hey, Tommy, I think you should tell everybody about this game that just came out recently that you were part of.
Oh, yes. Well, way back, way before September 11th. actually, I was talking to my friend. This is a totally different story, but I haven't told you this yet, Edmund. Imagine if we launched Super Meat Boy on September 11th, 2010. Now, imagine the advertising we could do. We could be like, oh, it would be like 9 years ago. This September 11th, it'll change again. That would be so inappropriate and awesome. But I don't think Microsoft would let us do that.
It would show
a couple clips from like CNN and stuff of like the towers collapsing, and then it would show Dr. Fetus.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah.
That could be.
But yeah, no, way back in 2000. Actually, but see, this doesn't apply to indie. This applies to asshole.
Yeah, but it still applies to a bunch of guys that think that they know what they're doing and get all these things done and then waste money.
So, back in 2000, what's the best way to tell this? Back in 2005, I moved to Amsterdam to work with this company on this Xbox Live game called Hoop World, which is now out on the Wii. That was in 2005. WiiWare, yes, not retail Wii, WiiWare. In 2005, the game had already been in development for about 4 or 5 years, and they kept getting investments, and they kept cycling through teams. And when I got there, I'm like, I kind of just took it all in stride. But as I worked there, and as I saw how they basically managed their team, and they dealt with like publishers, like that, how they dealt with Microsoft and stuff. And I saw that it was just basically a bunch of frat boys that saw that video games are money. And so they decided to like try to do the most business thing and start a company out in the Netherlands where they could pay people not a lot of money, and they could take advantage of people's dreams, basically, because everybody's dream, you know, is like, oh, I want to work on a video game. And they would exploit this. Exploit isn't even like a good enough word. I would say they would dangle the dream in front of you, because they were a contractor. So you would they would pitch it to you as, yeah, you could work on Gears of War. You could do art for Gears of War. And it's true. They did stuff for Gears of War. However, it was pieces of furniture for Gears of War. Oh, wow. And they would basically do this, and they would like, yeah, man, Epic loves us, man. And oh man, we did the James Bond, the new James Bond game. We did that. Well, they like modeled a gun or something for James Bond. That's all they did. I don't actually know what they did for James Bond, but I do know they made set pieces for Gears of War and stuff. And they would just dangle this out there, and they would just, you know, oh, you're working in the industry. Problem was, they would never let any company credit any of their artists in the credits. So, yes, they were working on Gears of War. However, if they put, yes, I did set pieces for Gears of War, and then the person that was looking over their resume went, hey, did they really? And then they look at the credits and they don't see their name, kind of makes them look bad. So they have to kind of stay at this company because it's the only one that will hire them, because they don't have employment. But yeah, anyway, so they got like a bunch of investors, and they're like, we're going to make our own game. And they got like 3 million euros in investments or something. They burned through all that shit. We had, our team had, this was going to be an XBLA game. We had, I believe, 10 programmers. We had a shit ton of artists. We had 2 producers. We had an art producer and a code producer, which was stupid. There's no reason to have any of that. And the code producer was hilarious. She had no idea what she was talking about. She would come in and go, did you, looking for Alphamat, did you get the animation done? And it's like, what? I'm going down my list of things to do, and what you just said is not on my list. Oh no, it's right here. That's not. You don't know what you're talking. Please, you're not a programmer. Leave me alone. But that's basically what they did. Is they had this giant team of people to make this downloadable game, and they didn't trust any of the people they employed. So they would always go back and like try to redesign stuff, and it was just awful. But it goes back to the whole thing of like, if you have an idea for a game that you want to make, and you can't make it by yourself, or by yourself and one other person or two other people, then you probably shouldn't make it, because it's not going to get done. You know, it's you have to be committed to the idea in order to do it. But to like start out and go, okay, well, I need to hire a business person, and I need to hire four more programmers, and I need to hire three more artists, and I need to hire a producer, and I need a lawyer. It's like, that's not going to work, because it's just not going to work, you know?
Well, tell them how it ended, Tommy.
What part of the end? Because there's several endings. It's like a choose your own adventure.
Cut to the current
ending. Oh, well, they after I left in 2005, I left in 2006. They partnered with another company to finish the game because the quality just wasn't up to snuff. The game ran perfectly. I was the engine programmer on the game. It ran perfectly. It was the only quality issue was the design, because they kept like second guessing the designer they hired. But anyway, they partnered with this company, and after 4 years of grueling work, finally put it out on WiiWare. And I'm happy to say it's not even in the top 20 WiiWare games.
So they probably made like a couple thousand dollars off their $3 million investment.
Well, you got to figure it this way. At the time I was there, I believe it was up to like 3 million euros or something. I believe. I you know, that's just what I heard through the grapevine. But like 3 million euros, that was 5 years ago. And then they had to partner with this company. So that company out, which means even more money, or they're splitting the profits with that company. So, you know, maybe that company has enough to buy a flat screen TV now. Probably not, though. The moral of the story is fuck those guys.
To sum it all up, is the idea that realistically that game, even though it was pretty ambitious because it was a 3D game, still could have been done by a team of two or three people, realistically. Yeah, it probably would have gotten finished. They spent beyond their means. They obviously didn't know what they were doing to begin with, so they kind of bit off
more than the people. Yeah, none of the people who were actually involved, like it was the top guy's brainchild, right? And then they hired out people to do it. Like, they weren't really actively involved in any of it. Like, the design and everything, that really wasn't – they weren't sitting there designing systems. They were – I guess you could say they were meta-designing. Like, they would say, instead of, oh, okay, well, the passing system needs to work so that I can target them with this, and when I hit this, it goes – they weren't designing that part. They were designing – it needs to feel like Power Stone and Arch Rivals. It needs to be, like, between those two. And I think in their minds, they thought it was like a slider in Visual Studio. It's like, okay, well,
push it over to Power Stone.
There it is. Whoa, you got way too much Power Stone in there. Take it back. Oh, okay. There it is. That's the sweet spot. Compile. But yeah, they weren't actual designers. And like their vision, I guarantee you the game that came out, well, they were kind of not designers, so I guarantee the game that came out was exactly their vision. But it's just kind of like, it's not good. It's stupid.
It's a fucking basketball game where you play as like different types of people. Like,
why do they even talk about this game anymore? We're gonna get them sales.
Of their sales in WeWorld because of us mentioning them in interviews.
That's true. That I'm in the special thanks, and I was actually very upset when I heard that, because I want nothing to do with that. I make it a point to tell people that I worked on the game so I can say that I have nothing to do with the game now. Like,
I just think they're the perfect example of why, if you're interested in making video games, why it's better for you to at least if you have the creative drive and you have the balls to attempt to go independent, try being independent first. Try being independent before you go to some company who will probably fail. Just check it out and see if it's fun for you. And I mean, it's better, you know, to live poor and happy than miserable and in the Netherlands.
I like the job. The job was actually fun. It was just whenever the managers would come over from their side of the building, they had to separate us, you know. It's so like fucking sociopathic kind of shit, because there was literally one half of the floor was everybody in one room, everybody, the artists, the producers, the designer, the programmer, everybody in this one room. The other side, which was behind doors and everything, was the management. And when the management would come over across that thing, that was when I was like, I got to go get M&Ms or go take a shit or something, because I don't need to be in the room right now. And yeah.
I guarantee that's how it is in most small studios like that. There's a lot of, I don't even know what you call them. Like, what do you call the studios that do contract work? Just contract studios?
Yeah, they're just contract studios.
I mean, they're like basically token game companies, but there's one in almost every fucking town. There's one called Santa Cruz Games that was in Santa Cruz and where I'm from. And we tried to work with them. We were going to do Gish on the PSP with them, and they basically tried to screw us over in the contract and tried to like own the IP. And it just, I mean, of course, they fell apart eventually as well. And they always get crushed under their own weight, because you can't, when you're contracting, you can't stay afloat. Like, there's always these companies who are like, we're just contracting just to get by because we're working on this big project. And realistically, that company probably would have still been around if they never invested in their own product.
Yeah, they probably would be. But they're really a weird case, because like, they didn't start out as like, oh, hey, we're independent developers, we love making games. They literally came at it as like almost the worst way you can go into anything is like, how can I make money off of this? How can I exploit? They're like seriously like business sociopath kind of people, where it's like, oh, I don't care who I fuck over as long as at the end of the day, my books are up. That's all I care about.
I guess the moral of this story is, if you're looking for money first and not a good game, then don't fucking make games.
Yeah.
Good advice. Yeah. Good advice.
So James, I have one other story, and this is like right before I quit that company. So I've always been the kind of person that whenever I work anywhere, I don't like to take shit. Basically, I'm not a shit taker. And like, I speak up, and I think when I speak up, you know, I'm expressing both an opinion and something that I think is very, very valid. So, we started getting through AlphaMat for Xbox. It was originally an XBLA game, and we started going through AlphaMat. We had to get our credits and everything together, and I'm sitting there coding, and I hear my friend talking to, this guy about credits, and I go and I kind of take out my headphones and I listen a little bit, and I go over to Mikhail. He's my friend, I can say him, he's a good guy. I go over to him and I go, I'm talking to you about credits. He's like, yeah. And I said, you let me know about those credits, because I have a feeling we're going to be disappointed. This was like a couple months, or like a couple weeks before, like they actually came out. Well, a couple weeks later, the credits come down, and it goes, lead design, and it was one of the boss people. And then it said executive producer, one of the boss people, associate producer, our worthless associate producer. And it goes through this list, and then it says developed by, and then all of the programmers and all of the artists were grouped into it. And I went, this is kind of fucked up. I mean, we're, you know, at least credit me as a programmer, you know, this developed by is just kind of bullshit. So I got really pissed off at that because this was around the time when I was working my fucking ass off. Like there was one week when I didn't leave the office, me and several other programmers and artists to make this AlphaMat deadline. We didn't leave the office. And around that time I was like, this is bullshit. So I sent out an email to everyone in the company and I said, hi, I'm taking care of the credits now. I would like everyone to send me their job title and their first and last name, and I will make sure it gets into the credits. A couple minutes later, the boss man, he's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I said, well, I'm making sure that everybody gets credited for the job that they've done. But we've done that. I said, developed by is not credit. I said, I did the engine for this. I would like to be credited as the engine programmer. Tom did the AI. This guy did this. This guy did that. And I said, it's bullshit to group us all in. He's like, he said, why are you doing this? They're like, what are you doing? He's like, you're being paranoid. And I go, it's not paranoia if it happened. Like, and he's like, you're being paranoid that we won't credit you. And I'm like, you just didn't. You put me on the list. Shortly after that, their deal with Microsoft fell through. And then I'm like, I'm out. but yeah, it was just awful shit. But yeah, let's not talk about that shitty game anymore. Let's talk about our shitty game. Our game's awesome. You know what's gonna be awesome? When in the first day we sell more than Hoop World did in its first month. That's gonna be hilarious.
Oh, you guys will. I don't doubt that.
Well, if we sell 25 copies.
Well, I'm buying five myself. So.
We'll buy five apiece, so you'll be good.
But yeah, like whenever I talk about them, it's like they are seriously, every horror story you hear about the games industry, these guys have done it. And they've probably done it worse than everybody else. It's like, you know, when all the wives of EA came up, it's like the reason there wasn't a Wives of Streamline is because we're all a bunch of fucking nerds that weren't married. No, that's why that didn't happen. But yeah, these guys are like the absolute worst of game development. And yeah, that's just that. But in anyways, let's change gears.
All right. Segue into get into the question.
Okay. All right. Kind of pertaining to that, you don't really have to delve too much into it.
Right.
James and I are working on a game for our blog, sort of just advertise it, not to make a profit or anything. And based on what you just said, we should basically just do our own thing and not try to merge with anyone else like you guys. Is that what you're saying? Just do our own thing if we're up to it. Thing.
Yeah, try to. I mean, seriously, the more people you introduce, the more problems.
Yeah,
it's just gonna cause more problems. You don't. If you can do it, you do it. I mean, it's going to come out better. I can guarantee that. Just
if you're wanting to do like an MMO or something, like,
yeah. Like keep it. No, like honestly, I could say keep it really simple, and then make it even simpler. If this is especially your first game,
yeah.
Make it really simple, like really, really simple.
It's basically
the first five games you make. These should all be thought of as almost throwaway learning experiences. They shouldn't be things that you think you're going to make money off of. Shouldn't be things you think are going to be these great works of art that are going to turn everybody's head. These aren't going to be that good. But that's the point. You need to accept the fact that if you're new to this, you really don't know what you're doing until you've actually put in years of experience. It's I'm still learning, and I've been doing this for like 7 years, and it excites me to know that I, you know, 10 years down the road, I'm going to know a lot more. And there's just stuff you can't learn until you've actually done it. Like, you can't fully appreciate or understand even certain genres of games, even though you can think mentally, I can break this thing apart and understand how it works. But until you've actually put it together and made it and finished a game in that genre, you cannot fully understand or have the experience needed to really make a good one. So, I mean, I highly recommend you make as many small little games, simple games as possible until you feel confident, and then just take a little bit, you know, push yourself a bit more and more and more until you work your way up. And if you're concerned about money, you know, once time passes and you gain experience, people will notice you and you will start making money. It's just a natural progression. If you're, if your games have value, you will make money off of them, and there are ways to make money off of indie games.
You know, I can actually add to this by tying it in to the movie Contact, which I just watched yesterday, matter of fact. But if you remember, Ellie, when she finally got into the machine and went to Vega, she got finished, and you know, she gets down and there's like a beach and everything, and then her dad shows up, and her dad's like, she's asking all these questions like, when do we get to come back? And her dad grabs her hand and says, small moves, Ellie, small moves. So take that with you, because it is small moves.
Oh, it's locked away now. This is mine.
Yeah, we were planning on just doing like a level by level kind of release to see like what people thought of it and get feedback on
just,
that sort of thing.
Just flash, just basic shit, just the potion shooting shit.
Yeah, it's called.
Yeah, it's just keep it simple and it's not going to hurt anything. Yeah. Just don't invest. You know, don't be ambitious. Don't let your ambition take you and run with you, because that's going to be the first mistake most people will make when making a game. It's like they want to make this really great game that they can come out of the gates, you know, impress everybody with, but just be realistic and understand that it's not going to be that great, and you're going to learn from it. So just put it out, just finish it, put it out. You know, that's experience, you know, that you've gained from this. And what you're doing right now is level grinding. You're not going to be that impressive until you're a higher level, but
yeah,
you need to grind, and it's kind of boring, and it's not the bells and whistles aren't there, but you need to grind in order to get to the fun part and to get to the part where you're
every game is a new quest.
Exactly. This isn't a nerdy analogy in the slightest. This is something that will tap into all walks of life. Everybody, my mom knows what I'm talking about when I'm saying, yeah, mom, you just got to level grind a bit. One day you'll get magic missile and you'll be smooth sailing all the way.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Can summon scorpions and stuff. I can summon scorpions.
Awesome.
All right, so would you guys ever consider doing a collaboration project like with Gaijin Games, since you love the BitTrip stuff?
Probably not.
It's as simple as, I mean, I love those guys. And
yeah, you know, they're great.
Thing, but realistically, what, you know, how would that work? Okay, so I'm usually lead design when it comes to game design, and I'm usually the lead artist when it comes to the art. And Tommy's always the programmer, and I mean, not to say that they're not good programmers, but Tommy's really good.
He's the best.
So what would we do in this situation? Like, how would
I don't know how it would split up. It's like there's too much power in the room.
it's an overload. It's just you walk around with calcium stains in your underwear all day. And it's just an uncomfortable experience. So that probably wouldn't work out in the end. It's a hard thing, you know, collaborating. I've wanted to work with, and there's so many people I've wanted to work with. Like, I really wanted to make a game with Dan Paladin, but realistically, like, how can we work together? Because we're both dominant artists, so it's not going to work. Like, who does what? You know, there's too many toes that will be stepped on, and it's just an impossible
sort of. Who decides? You know, whose idea is being made? You know?
Yeah, it's a weird power play bizarre thing that I don't even want to get into. It's like I don't even want to go there.
So no Capcom versus SNK type mashup between you guys once you have like 40 or 50
dude,
out there.
Meat Boy is going to be in the new Smash Brothers.
Yeah,
but that's not going to require anything from us. except a very enthusiastic fuck yes.
That would be rad.
God, that would be. I would probably kill myself after that happened, because.
So you can end on the high note.
What's that? Yeah, that's it. I'm out.
Oh man, that would be rad.
All right.
So Nintendo, if you're listening to this podcast, that's an okay from us. Next Smash Bros.
They're one of our. Loyalists. They listen to us weekly. If you were given the opportunity to turn any of your old IPs into like WiiWare games, such as Cunt, Would you turn that into a family classic instead of Super Meat Boy, or would you rather like use your time to make new IPs?
That's a hard question because I know I really, really like Time Fuck and Ether are two games that I know that I could expand on a lot. And like, especially Ether, it feels like such a little bite-sized, you know, it was a 9-day game, you know, or no, it was 11 days, I think. It took 11 days to finish that one. But it was only, you know, a little over a weekend. It was just one of those things where you're kind of like riding the creative wave and letting it take you and then just wrapping it up, making something simple. And it was just so, it was such an inspiring game for me that I wrote down pages and pages and pages of other ideas and a lot of really moody, really cool stuff that I really want to do eventually, especially that game. Time Fuck is another one that I know I could expand on a lot and turn it into a completely new game. But realistically, I don't know, at least not after Meat Boy, I don't want to work on something that I've done before, give it some time, you know, and see what happens. I just don't want to like, oh, I made that in Flash and that was popular, so let's expand on it. You can't do it with every, you know, every game. Ether and Time Fuck are two that have a possibility, but I definitely don't think the next game that me and Tommy do will be something that I've done before. Something fresh and something that's just me and Tommy, I think would be ideal.
It'd be awesome as well, probably.
Damn right. I don't know. I think we're gonna go kind of like Frontierville. Anyway, I really have a strong ambition to collect. I like to harvest.
Tommy's a hoarder.
Yeah,
he's not gonna throw anything away.
It's disgusting. I have bottles in every cabinet. And they're full. They're full of my urine. Everything that was a part of me remains a part of me.
Yes.
Fantastic.
He walks around in this suit that has like bottles of urine attached to it. So he's always having around. It's weird. It's not like when me and him go to go get a sandwich or something, it's an embarrassing thing.
Yeah.
Click, clink, click, clink, click, clink. It's like, what? Yeah. What is that guy? Oh, it's urine.
It's urine. Well, from far enough away, it looks like honey. But it's really kind of disappoints people when they come up and it's not honey. It is in fact my urine, which is very dark sometimes.
Should be drinking more water, Tommy.
I'm trying, but you know, whatever.
All right, so you decided to release Super Meat Boy on the 360. Did Microsoft offer you an insane amount of money for timed exclusivity?
Oh, that's a good one to clear up.
Yeah, that is a good one to clear up.
You want to do it, Tommy?
Yes, I will take care of this one. No. What they offered us and what people have to understand, and this is something that's like, Edmund, with your permission, I'm going to pat ourselves on the back a little bit right here.
Pat away.
Okay, so everybody knows Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light or whatever, that XBLA thing that's coming out?
Yeah.
You know that it has a month of exclusivity, right?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it has a month of exclusivity from XBLA to the PS3. There's 1 month of exclusivity that Ubisoft managed to negotiate. We also managed to negotiate 1 month of exclusivity, and that's a huge deal. I mean, Braid was 6 months, I think, at least. It was 6 months for Braid on XBLA, And then a year for PS3. See, it was 6 months for PC, 1 year for PS3. Castle Crashers is about the same, but Castle Crashers on PS3 isn't out yet.
No,
not yet.
Soon.
But no, when you go and you have a good game and you pitch it to Microsoft and they greenlight it and you start talking about like actually they don't greenlight it until you talk about exclusivity and stuff. But they only want games that are exclusive to their platforms now, and that was the exact same when when we were negotiating with them from, what, October of last year?
Yeah.
So we spent a lot of time talking with them and having them play the game. And, you know, because we announced on WiiWare first, and initially they did not like that at all. It was either, okay, stop WiiWare, or you can't be on XBLA. And we worked and worked and worked and negotiated, and we got 1 month of exclusivity, just the same as Ubisoft did. And that was how it worked out. There was no money or anything. The deal was that we got on XBLA and on WiiWare. And we're like,
that's what we got.
Yeah.
The reward for us giving them exclusivity for a month, was literally putting the game on this reward. We get nothing. Like, I don't even think we can talk about our contract, but you could say that there might possibly be a clause in there that says that we can never get any money up front until the game's done. We will not get anything from anybody until people buy the game, and then we will just get a cut of the game. We're not getting anything. We're not getting funded.
So your health insurance isn't going to be covered?
What was that?
Your health insurance won't be covered then by...
No, I it's going to sound horrible, but I still do not have health insurance. I cannot afford it right now, but I will soon. I'm covering the thing so I don't have... there's like an insurance that you can get that'll cover anything like over like $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, you know, depending on what you're paying, $1,000 in case I get in an accident or something like that. I'm going to be getting that soon so I can cover my ass, but at this point it's... you should see my truck.
It's covered in styrofoam.
Well, it's got a tarp on it, but no, yeah, it's to the point where I can't drive the freeway, and I'll get pulled over a lot.
Have you gotten pulled over more since I was there last?
I get looks. I've just been lucky. Usually the cops are doing something else and they'll like look over and give me a weird look, but then they keep driving.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird, but the new tarp is a bit better. I know, like, I was getting more almost pulled over by cops because the old tarp was aging, and the whole side of my truck, the passenger side, is totaled. The truck still drives and everything, but the door doesn't open. It's I don't even know how it's held on, but I've duct taped the whole side of it, and there's a big tarp that goes over it so the cats and the rain don't get into it. So basically, I had a tarp on it, and I could barely see out of it, and I think people noticed. So I used that with this vinyl. It was an upgrade. Upgrade to a vinyl, clear vinyl, kind of, I don't even know what it is, like rubbery type vinyl stuff. Goes over there, it looks like a window. It looks fucking awful, but also awesome. but yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, I've got this trash truck. At this point, it's like we don't care about anything, and there's just garbage all over the ground. But in the back, it's just full of Meat Boy comics and stickers. I drive around if I see somebody. I gave some kids a Meat Boy comic, and when we were up going to try to go up the coast to the beach, and threw some comics at some kids. I think they liked it. I probably thought I was.
Come say hi to us. Give us some comics.
Where are you guys? Are you Northern California?
Yeah, up by Sacramento.
Where?
By Sacramento.
Oh, I used to live in Sacramento for 20 days. That was fucking horrible.
Yeah, it's a horrible place.
Luckily, it was in the fall winter time, so we didn't hit any like crazy heat. But man, that's depressing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, it is.
It was like a ghost town, man. I think around that time, like the road that we lived on, we were staying with my wife's mom, and the road that we would drive down. Out of the little downtown city area kind of place. I guess they found like a box with a kid in it or something.
Oh God.
like
terrible.
Yeah, and they're like the suicide rates, I think, pretty high in Sacramento.
Well, half the Fistful Potion team is unemployed. So
nice.
You guys, you're okay. There's places you can call if you need them.
Oh no.
Thanks. They have hotlines for that.
We're keeping ourselves occupied by making a game.
Yeah.
Stay inside.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Inside. You're fine.
You guys have got really awesome. You know what you got though? You got really awesome
It's gonna sound horrible. Usually places that the more like depressed and or poor some areas get, if you go to thrift stores in those areas, the thrift stores are awesome. Pawn shops and all that sort of stuff, super sweet. In Santa Cruz, see, I live in Santa Cruz. It's a ridiculously expensive town to live in. It's as expensive as San Francisco, actually. I'm stuck here because my family's here and I can't leave. So I've got a really nice place. It's really cheap. It's an apartment. But they didn't have stairs while they were renting it, so they kept lowering the price, and we got it for a pretty cheap amount. They didn't realize it. I guess someone was renting it from a remote location and wondering why no one was renting the apartment. They didn't know that there was no stairs that got up to the second story. So the price kept getting lower and lower. But anyway, what I'm saying is it's really expensive here. And because it's expensive, it means everybody here is rich. And because they're rich, they are fucking hipsters. And they go to the thrift shops trying to get cool and crap and whatever else. So our thrift stores really suck. Like, bad. But we scored a I Survived Katrina shirt for Tommy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's that at Goodwill. Yeah.
Awesome. So you know what? I did. We all survived Katrina. But it still happened, and I still lived from I was alive before it happened, and I was alive after it happened. So by definition, I did survive Katrina.
That was an accurate shirt you got there.
Yep. They put a lot of effort into that shirt. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but there's,
it's on the front page of your website.
Yeah, no, you couldn't have made that with one of those $19 t-shirt screener things that they sell at 12 o'clock at night.
Speaking of shirts, have you guys sold many of your Super Meat Boy shirts?
A lot of shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're almost out of our own personal stock. But Newgrounds is selling them as well. They have all the sizes on Newgrounds, and they're actually selling a bit better than us, of course, but it's Newgrounds.
Yeah.
I really like the shirts. It came out perfectly. And it was one of those things where, I don't know if you guys played Gish, but a long time ago, that was the first big game that I was known for, and it won in 2005 in the IGF. A grand prize. And I think in 2006 or 7, I was approached by this company that wanted to like capitalize on the indie game thing. This was actually before it got really popular. So they were a bit early. But they were making these t-shirts that were based on indie games, and they were going to sell them with little bite-sized version of those games on disc and sell them in Target. And they were actually sold in stores for like a week, but they didn't sell enough because the t-shirts were fucking horrible. it was me, Alex, the guy I work on Gish with, and Kyle Gabler from World of Goo. Before World of Goo, he had this game called Tower of Goo, and it was pretty popular. And so he made a Tower of Goo shirt and some other t-shirts and whatever else. And when they approached, so we're all artists, as I approached me about doing the shirt, I'm like, I'm going to do the shirt. You don't need your guys to do the shirt. I'm going to do a really cool Gish shirt. It's going to be solid black, and it's going to have his face on the front. And they're like, I don't understand that. but how are you going to see his head? And I said, no. He is the shirt, you know? This is cool. I swear to God, this is really good. I don't know. Here, send us some pictures, and we'll see. Send him some pictures. Oh, we don't like that. We can't see his body. No, you don't understand. He is the shirt. The shirt's black. His body's black. Oh, but I don't know. It's not going to work. Here, we're going to box something up for you and see what you think. They said Gish is gray, light gray. He's floating in the air on a light blue t-shirt. And I'm like, that looks horrible, and I don't like that. Can we please use mine? No. So they printed their shirt, and they also did these like really horrible caricatures of us that were like, supposed to be semi-realistic drawings of our faces.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I look like fucking John Goodman on the back of it. I was the whole time I'm thinking, oh, my God, like, that shirt would have been so fucking awesome. So when Meat Boy came around and we started pushing this, like, iconic beat-up Meat Boy face with missing tooth, I thought, you know, that would be perfect for a t-shirt. And it was awesome to finally get to print it. And I really love those t-shirts. And people seem to really like them a lot, and we've sold a lot, and it's bizarre for us to be selling
merchandise for a game that is not out yet. But I guess it shows that people like the character. So I will be happy when the game comes out so we can legitimize the purchase of those t-shirts for people. But yeah, no, I liked it. I love that t-shirt. I'm trying to think of a good Dr. Fetus one. I'd like to do a Dr. Fetus one later, but haven't come up with a great design yet.
Cool. We're going to move on to a couple questions we got from our readers / listeners. One from Clay was, do you guys get asshole emails from groups like PETA or just people in general with no rationale? If so, how do you respond to them?
Well, we haven't gotten any PETA emails yet.
We actually tried. Like, this was like a thing we were going to do. We're like, oh, it would be so awesome if PETA campaigned against us. I made like a fake account and posted in their forums and nobody cared.
PETA's about high profile stuff. Like,
it's also not logical. Predict what some lunatic on the street corner is going to shout out to people driving by. So you don't know what he's going to be upset about. Like, you could walk by in a penguin shirt and he'll fucking flip out. Same way. It's like, you can't try to market something for them to be upset about. They have to just randomly choose something and then compare it to the Holocaust and not understand why that's really horrible. So, we put out an ad a while ago and it said it was a bovine chart and the centerpiece was Meat Boy. And it said Hitler was a vegetarian. Don't be like Hitler. And that, I mean, I guess that kind of upset some people for, because they're confused about what we're saying. Cause they don't know if we're saying that, I guess people thought we were saying vegetarians were like Hitler. I don't understand how the hell that anybody could think that that is what we are saying. And we're quite clearly saying people are fucking stupid, but no, that was something that we thought maybe somebody like PETA would be upset about. They didn't care. They got their own stupid agenda. Yeah. It just involved promoting our game.
The only asshole emails we get are, and well, we haven't really gotten them as emails, but it's either stuff about the PS3, like maybe you guys should learn how to program on PS3, which we did. And it worked, and they didn't play it because they're disorganized. But we get that, and we get, why isn't this game out already? I've heard about this game for 3 years. And it's like, the Flash game wasn't even out 3 years ago. other than that, I don't know, we kind of respond. Yesterday I told a guy to fuck off because he was like, this game's taking forever, and Fez is taking forever, and these guys gave a talk on how to finish a game. And it's like, Fez is taking forever, and Fez did give a talk on, successfully marketing a game or something. We haven't, because we're too busy making the game, and the game's only been in development for, 18 months on 4 systems, so we're kind of doing record time here.
Yeah, there's only 2 of you doing it, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. We're burning through it quick. But yeah.
Next question is the prefix super to Super Meat Boy a throwback to the Super NES games? Like all the sequels were titled Super Mario, that sort of thing. Is that kind of what you're going for with this? Or is it just because it's way better than Meat Boy?
No, this is a thought out. Yes, no, it's super from the super age. We are in the late 20s, I'm 30. Tommy is, you're 29 now, right, Tommy?
Yeah, I'm 29 now. Yeah.
So we lived in an era of Super, and that was awesome. So we decided to put that in front of the game so we could be awesome.
Yeah, we're definitely all SNES kids over here as well. So
nice.
It's good to see somebody.
I never called it SNES.
Oh. No, you know why? You know why, Tommy? Because we're older than they are. I guarantee it. Nobody called it that then.
That's true.
No, yeah, we don't. I mean, I call it the Super, but
who the fuck calls it the Super?
Apparently,
I called. I was playing the Super the other day, and
you sound like an 85-year-old Jewish man. Hey, get out the Super.
Hey, I played the Super. Get the Super over here.
Now, what's that game you're playing? Adventures of Metroid.
Awesome.
Me and my brother were raised on a farm, so we called it the Super to each other.
Well, that's awesome. That's just awesome. We called it the Super Nintendo.
It was either Super Nintendo or Super NES.
They called it the Super No Friendo. That's what the cool kids call.
Yeah. And those guys work at Sitco now, and they pump my gas for me. I remember, that was one guy. This guy was a total fucking asshole. His name was Brian Chris, and he was on the football team, and me and all my friends, we were in the chess club, but we actually weren't in the chess club. We were just academic, right. And we all went on to do stuff, and he works at Sitco, so he can kiss my ass forever.
Awesome. Here, one sec. I'm going to fucking piss my pants.
Awesome. Fish break.
I'll tell you another story about Brian Crisp.
Sweet.
Brian Crisp was such an asshole that my friend Jason has always been sort of a loudmouth guy, but he's an awesome guy. He came from like Jersey, so he always had kind of a mouth on him. And Brian Crisp was something of a stupid redneck. And because I live in North Carolina, I don't live in California. I live mountains of Western North Carolina. So I'm right in the Bible Belt and all that shit.
Wow.
So you can imagine how fun it is for an atheist asshole living in Christianville. Actually sounds like it could be a show like on the UPN.
Yes.
But
Tyler Perry will do it.
Yeah. Tyler Perry's Christian asshole and Bible Belt hellhole. Yeah. So my friend Jason always kind of got in these like, he always got in over his head, and Jason's kind of short. So, like Brian Crisp was like 6'2 or something. My friend Jason was maybe 5'6. And so instead of like fighting Jason, because Jason like mouthed off to him or something, he gets up behind him at a stoplight. And when the lights stop, Brian Crisp runs out and goes to my friend Jason's car and punches him in the face and then runs away.
Wow.
And it's like, you're a 6'2" like football player, and Jason's like this 5'6", like nothing. it's like, what are you doing? But yeah, I hated that guy, and I'm very, very glad that his life is meaningless now.
He's gonna hear about that, Tommy. He's gonna hear.
Oh,
about
is he? When's he gonna get internet?
He's gonna go to the local library to update his MySpace.
Yeah. He's gonna go to Etowah Public Library and log on and be like, "Hey, Tommy Riffman said bad stuff about me. If I knew how to read a map, I'd go to his house and beat him up."
Yes.
Another question, kind of from our readers, kind of from us. Why'd you let us interview you?
This is what we do. We take interviews from everybody. You guys aren't special.
Oh.
Yeah, we took this podcast interview thing from you guys because there was a point where, well, I can speak for myself here, where I would email people and ask for whatever and tell them, I'm new doing this and I'm looking for some exposure and whatever else, and they cut me a break, so there you go.
All right, cool.
Hang it forward.
We appreciate it greatly.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, since we're so new and you guys are like a fucking celebrity to us, we're like meeting the Beatles right now. Might be hard for you guys to understand, but it's just like we're just orgasming constantly right now. It's kind of messy.
You know what? You're hiding it pretty well.
Well, me and James were like shaking. We've been shaking since you replied to our email.
Carts will come. Just comes everywhere. Just
that is awful. That is an awful image.
We've been saving it just like you've been saving your urine.
Gross.
We're sick.
Yeah, people that save their semen, that's just weird.
Yeah, that's gross.
No, but we got money for it. We send it to Australia.
Yeah.
What? How? Really?
Yeah.
You get paid hell of money for it. Anyways.
What?
We were just wondering if you guys could like give like a shout out for us so we could put you like at the front of our like podcast every now and then. Like this is Team Meat and Go Fuck Off or something like similar to that.
What is the name of your morning radio show and or comedy afternoon duo?
It's just Fistful of Potions.
Yep. Fistful of Potions.
Yeah.
Let's see. What could we say about Fistful of Potions? Yeah, we can say something.
All right.
I don't know what, but we'll figure something.
All right. Cool. Thanks.
What do they usually say on the radio? What are those like? There's like buzzword filled snippet of like.
And now,
This is Evan McMillan from Team Me saying the Fistful of Potions is sweet.
Oh man!
Yeah! Tune in, queer.
This is Tommy from Team Meat saying, I'm going to stick a fistful of potions up your ass. Yes.
That was perfect.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you so much.
Awesome.
I've got a story to conclude this interview.
All right. Sweet.
And it's valid and it can be applied to every aspect of life, and I it's something to think about. I went to Whole Foods today. I go to Whole Foods to get a sandwich. It's a sandwich called, they call it the Pier, and it's just, you know, it's a basic sandwich. It's got meat in it and avocado and whatever else, and they got their spreads. Okay, now I actually avoid going to Whole Foods because I go to Safeway. They have better sandwiches and they're a bit cheaper. But there, it's further. So I decided, okay, I'll just go. I'm really fucking hungry. And, I don't know about you guys, but when I get really hungry, I get very intolerant and angry.
Yeah.
So I'm already borderline, you know, raging at this point and I need my sandwich. So I go into Whole Foods and I get there and usually it's this totally vacant, blonde girl who's just floating in space. And she's pretty good though. She makes a sandwich, but this time it's this little brown haired girl I've never seen before. And I'm basically the only one there, and I stand up and I'm like, yeah, can I get a pier? And she goes, sure. And I said, can I get no bacon on it? And she goes, oh, okay, well, you're going to have to fill out this form.
What?
I said, what? And she goes, it's a specialty sandwich that you're asking for, so you're going to need to fill out this form and tell me what you want on it. And I said, I want everything it has. I just don't want one thing. I don't want bacon. Just don't put bacon on it. And she goes, oh, I understand, but you need to fill out the form. It's like there's no line. There's nobody else there. I'm like, okay, no, can you just make it and not put bacon on it? Like, this is super simple. And she goes, I understand, but we have a new policy here. And it says that if you want stuff edited in your sandwich, you're going to need to fill out this form because it's a specialty sandwich. And I'm also going to have to charge you extra for the avocado that I'm going to have to put on it because avocado is extra. And I said, no, I want the pier, that the one you have up there, but I don't want bacon on it. It's that simple. And she's like, I can't do that. And I said, okay, well, why don't you make it? And then I'll take the bacon off. And she goes, and she says, okay, I can do that. And my fucking, so my mind is fucking blown at this point. And I'm in my head going like, oh my God, I feel the rage building. And it's just like the logic here is just insane. And I see her starting to cut the fucking bread. And I go, you know what? Can you just not put bacon on that sandwich? And she goes, no, I can't. And I said, I don't fucking want the sandwich. And I left. And oh my God, it was just, oh, it was fucking mind blowing. But the moral of this story and the thing that I'm trying to say here is that there are a lot of people in the world, especially in the United States, that follow blindly. They don't experience things for themselves and they don't question any kind of authority or rule or anything like that. They just do what they're told. And they don't question it, no matter how completely illogical it is. They want to follow. And it's horrible. And it's the downfall of fucking society that nobody thinks for themselves these days. Fucking girl can't understand that I'm asking her to do less work
You don't have to put something on. You are going to make more money as a store for not spending this fucking extra on this piece of bacon that you're putting on, and then you have to do less work. You burn less calories. You have to eat less. And you're going to sleep better at night knowing that you do that extra fucking thing. You're not fucking in the fields plucking berries. Don't put fucking bacon on my goddamn sandwich. It's not hard. But it's just like people don't question anything anymore. You know, they don't question, you know, the magical gods they worship, and they don't question why they need to, you know, follow all these different rules or hire a fucking producer or hire a businessman or hire extra people to help them produce their game, or, you know, it's just there's all these bizarre rule sets that people grow up with and everything else like that, and it's very disappointing. And I think one of the things that you need in order to be independent is in the independent thought process, which is questioning everything and then experimenting and see if it works. And that's how life should be. And that's all I have to say. That's how I'm concluding this, is think for your fucking self, question what you're doing, and make up things as you go. Don't just follow blindly, or you're going to be like that fucking loser girl who won't fucking take the goddamn bacon off, and it's not hard to do.
I say amen to that.
Yeah,
that's it. All right, well, thank you guys for giving us your time while you're finishing your first TeamMeet console release.
Thank you.
Hopefully we can interview you again sometime in the future when you're doing something else, less busy maybe.
Sure. Totally, yeah, just tell us when it's up and learning, whatever.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it'll be on iTunes. We'll throw it up. You guys can listen to us failing and you guys succeeding.
Yeah, we'll send you an email as soon as it goes up.
Cool. Sweet, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Later.